This is a Travel Channel podcast.
St. Augustine, Florida holds the distinction of being the oldest city in America.
A lot of Americans tend to forget that we were having grandchildren here in St. Augustine long before, as I put it, the pilgrims ever found the rock.
The Spanish were the first Europeans to permanently settle in the area. And to this day, the city retains its international flavor. In fact, Spanish has been the primary language of St. Augustine longer than English. Visitors arrive in St. Augustine looking to experience history. But according to some residents, history in St. Augustine has a way of telling itself.
I was absolutely riveted in my tracks. I thought, this can't be happening to me. This must be a ghost.
There are so many spirits that there are 8 different ghost tours in St. Augustine every night.
When people come here and the sun starts to go down, you immediately start thinking of the supernatural and the fact that there have been people here for hundreds of years, and many of the streets go through old cemeteries, and it's just the perfect setting for tours of the supernatural.
Another perfect setting for the supernatural is the Old City House Inn. Locals say it was once the site of a military fort. But most guests checking in have no idea about the ghosts. They come looking for romance at this intimate 7-bedroom inn. The 2-story mansion is best known for its unique exterior, stuccoed with shells, and its lion statues that seem to be guarding the courtyard. But if employees and visitors are to be believed, when the dark blanket of night wraps itself around the old city house, the lions aren't the only guardians of the inn. There are rumors of a ghostly sentry standing guard on the same soil where he once kept watch, and where the old City House Inn sits today.
One evening, after coming down from cheese and wine on the patio, I actually saw the Spanish soldier in full military regalia.
He doesn't know he's dead. He's still guarding the place.
Centuries ago, St. Augustine was a walled city under constant threat of attack. Brave Spanish soldiers guarded the city from sentry stations positioned along the wall. It was a brutal assignment. Long days in the sweltering outpost that was St. Augustine took its toll on the soldiers. On a particularly sweltering afternoon, one soldier was preparing his gun for target practice. As he did every day, he loaded the gunpowder into the chamber, then lit his match cord. But a spark fell into the chamber. The gun misfired.
He was killed almost instantaneously. He had no idea that he was shot. And subsequently, he still thinks he's on patrol.
Guests at the inn that sits where he met his untimely end have reported seeing the sentry, still in uniform, keeping his nightly watch, not knowing that he himself has become the strange noise in the darkness. In case you think the stories are the byproducts of simple human fears and paranoia, there is also a witness to the haunting that isn't human. A Jack Russell Terrier with a strange nose for the supernatural. There are areas of the old City House Inn the dog will simply refuse to go, and she'll occasionally bark at something that can't be seen by human eyes.
I've seen her bark down the hallway here. Just barks and barks and she won't move.
I know she's the friendliest little dog in the world, and I knew that there was something that she was sensing that was unusual or supernatural.
Perhaps this dog is protecting her home from ghosts, but at the old City House Inn, it's a full-time job. There are stories of another spirit roaming the halls. This one, unlike the soldier, has a real knack for mischief. When a psychic visited the old City House Inn, he told her his name is William.
William is the prankster of the 3 ghosts that we have here at the old City House, and he will tend to knock on doors. Some of our guests enjoy it, and some of our guests don't think it's very funny.
Quite a few guests have complained that someone's knocked on their door. They open the door, and there's nobody there. And they get this uncanny feeling, and there's a little cold breeze, and they look around and there's no one there.
William whispers to all who can hear him that he prefers to be called by the initials WM. The mysterious WM has also been known to turn lights on and off at random. WM is the most mysterious of the inn's ghosts, but he has become an integral piece of the evolving Old City House Inn legend.
There have been stories and loves and losses since the 1500s on this very site. I think those spirits don't just evaporate. I think they still exist in some component right here.
Denver, Colorado is the perfect destination for those who love the untamed beauty of the Rocky Mountains and big city thrills.
Well, Denver started out as just a flat, open prairie, and there were gold strikes in the mid-1800s, and so folks came out here to stake their claims. And ultimately, as those people made their fortunes and came back to the city, it became the Queen City of the Plains.
And sitting pretty in the middle of Denver's bustling streets is one of the city's oldest and grandest hotels, the Brown Palace.
The Brown Palace is Denver's jewel of historic hotels, no question about it. People from all over the world recognize the name and know that it's an elegant place to come and stay or come and dine.
Oh, it's gorgeous here. Just looking at the architecture makes you feel like you're back in the early 1900s.
But while the hotel's elegance and grandeur entice tourists from all over the world, many say it also attracts visitors from beyond the grave.
It's definitely a different feeling after midnight. Just dark and quiet and sometimes a little bit eerie.
Mysterious specters abound at the Brown Palace and seem to enjoy the company of the hotel's sleeping guests.
Staring into my eyes about 2 feet away from the bed was this black, formless shape.
But instead of hiding their existence, the hotel welcomes their spirits and honors them each night during the Brown Palace Ghost Tour.
This corner of the building and this room seems to be central to all activity that happens. Reports from this room vary everything from cold, chilling winds to apparitions.
And there's one in particular who seems most honored by this nightly tribute.
Well, one we hear consistently involves a gentleman dressed in railroad clothing.
Seeing a train conductor ghost on a group ghost tour might be fun, but seeing him alone late at night is another story entirely.
A couple sightings were in the Brown Palace club room, one of which is when a graveyard houseman unlocked the room and entered it to do his nightly cleaning. And in a dark corner, he could see a figure. As he got closer to the figure, he noticed that he looked like someone who was a railroad conductor.
The conductor vanished before his eyes, and the handyman refused to go back into the room. But why would a train conductor haunt the Brown Palace Hotel?
Well, we know that in the early part of last century, up to the 1920s, there was a Rock Island Railway ticket office that occupied a spot on the ground floor of the hotel. Perhaps he worked in the ticket office and just never wanted to leave.
It seems there are many spirits here, and if you walk the hallways late at night, you never know who or what you'll run into.
I heard the door open again, so I snuck around here. There's nobody there. There's absolutely nobody here, and the only way to open the door is with the pressure pad. So, okay, I'm getting the hackles up in the back of my neck.
Frightened, Doug ran out the door, but what happened next sent chills up his spine.
Go out the main door, lock the doors behind me, down the stairs, cross the street, and when I look back, all the lights are back on. And that's when I just said, okay, if you want the lights on, you may have the lights on.
Later, a hotel employee researching the hotel's history began to realize that many of the hauntings were similar and could only be the work of one woman, Brown Palace's most famous ghost, the late Mrs. Crawford Hill.
In the year 2000, we discovered her story. We said, oh, this great story of scandal and heartbreak and love and lust.
Mrs. Crawford Hill's story goes back to the early days when Denver was still considered the Wild West.
Denver and Colorado were known as the Wild, Wild West because it was 700 miles to the nearest city, and many desperados and bummers and outlaws headed west.
Gold was pouring out of the mountains, but the citizens of Denver didn't always have the sophistication that usually accompanies wealth. That was until a Southern belle named Louise Hill brought high society to the foothills of the Rockies.
She was the undisputed queen of Denver society. In the early 1900s, her home on Capitol Hill was the scene of numerous parties, and she became very powerful.
Louise and her husband Crawford lived the high life on Capitol Hill, throwing lavish parties and hosting Denver's elite.
There was a young man by the name of Bulkley Wells who appeared on the scene, and he must have liked attending parties at the Hill Mansion so much that he decided to stay.
Bulkley was so taken by the luxurious lifestyle that he actually moved into the Hill's Capitol Hill estate. Bulkley and Mrs. Hill grew close, some say too close, and soon everyone knew of their scandalous affair, except for Mr. Crawford Hill. So when Mr. Hill passed away a few years later, the community expected Mrs. Hill and her young lover would make their love public.
When Crawford died of natural causes, everyone just assumed that Louise and Bulkley would be married, no one more so than Louise herself. But it was not to be. Bulkley ended up leaving town with someone much younger than he, and Louise was heartbroken.
Louise would forever lament her unrequited love and couldn't bear the painful memories of her Capitol Hill home.
Eventually, she sold the mansion on Capitol Hill, and she took up residence in the Brown Palace in the Skyline Apartments on the 9th floor. And she lived here as a virtual recluse for the last 15 years of her life.
In 1955, Louise Hill died, a lonely, desperate woman. But many at the hotel say her spirit lingers, forever doomed to relive her heartache. But beware, Louise doesn't like to hear her sad tale retold.
So we started telling the tale of her life. And a few days later, the switchboard began receiving calls from her old apartment, which was odd because the room was unoccupied. And when the operators would pick up the phone, there was just static on the end of the line.
Hotel engineers checked out the disturbances, but concluded there was no way the calls could be coming from the room. There was no explanation.
And yet the calls continued to come in. So word got back to me and I said, "Don't you see? It's Louise." I said, "I think she's trying to send us a message. After all, we're running around the hotel telling a scandalous story about her life by a portrait."
But each night they continued telling her story, and Louise kept reminding them, "Don't disturb the dead."
It's just a weird coincidence. Well, I even took a group into her old apartment, and all of a sudden when I got to the part of the story about the phone ringing, the doorbell starts to ring. And I didn't move, and I could see, based on the looks on everyone's faces, that something was not right. And I said, "There's no one at the door, is there?" And they all said, "No."
For 50 years, Louise Hill's ghost has remained silent within the walls of the Brown Palace, only to be awakened by the haunting echoes of her somber tale.
It was probably a terrible, terrible memory to have returned to her. And all of a sudden, here was someone who wanted to bring that all up again. I don't think she liked it.
So if you spend the night at the Brown Palace Hotel, be sure to take advantage of its luxurious accommodations. But if you see a do not disturb sign hanging on the door, take heed. It may not be a sleeping guest, but a slumbering spirit. Few American cities are as beautiful or as mysterious as Savannah, Georgia.
Savannah is absolutely the most beautiful city, I think, in the world. We have everything here, especially in the springtime. The azaleas, the flowers, it's a walking city. And lots of people like to take walking tours.
Savannah is one of the most beautiful places in the United States to visit or to live. It's a historic city. It's a city that has the largest landmark historic district in the United States.
Besides being one of the oldest cities in America, Savannah lays claim to another dubious distinction.
Savannah is one of the most haunted cities in America.
Savannah, it gets a lot of attention for having lots and lots of ghosts and spirits. It's kind of a spooky place. You've got a dark river flowing. You've got lots of cemeteries, lots of history. It's a city that lends itself to those types of thoughts.
Savannah's haunted reputation hasn't hurt its appeal. Nearly 6 million travelers visit the city each year.
Tourism is very big in Savannah, and one of the things that draws people to Savannah on their vacation, their leisure time, believe it or not, are the ghosts.
And tourists who are drawn to the ghosts of Savannah would be hard-pressed to find better and more haunted accommodations than the historic Marshall House Hotel.
Marshall House is haunted. Every ghost tour company in Savannah, and ours as well, always talks about, you know, the Marshall House and how it is haunted.
We've been told by several guests that they have heard or seen or felt something strange.
The story of the Marshall House begins in 1851 and centers around one of Savannah's most respected and revered legends, Mary Marshall.
Mary's father was a French cabinet maker who acquired a great number of properties in Savannah when he was alive. When he passed away, he left all of this property to Mary. And Mary developed and ran the Marshall House.
You have to imagine the kind of will that this woman would have to run a hotel like this, to build it, in a time when women were not entrepreneurs. They were not considered leaders. They were really considered just sort of housewives or mothers or, in the rare instance, nurses, things like this.
In fact, Mary and her remarkable hotel were called upon by the Confederates during the Civil War. The hotel shut its doors and turned itself into a makeshift hospital for wounded Confederate soldiers. Mary Marshall took as much care with her wounded soldiers as she had with her paying guests.
It's a common tradition up until and through, I would say, World War I, for hospitals and care units to bring women in to sing to the soldiers. And Mary Marshall would herself come in to do some of the singing.
Mary's songs, which brought comfort to countless soldiers of the Confederacy, have proven more disconcerting to Marshall House employees and guests over a century later.
I was on the second floor between room 218 and 220, and I kept hearing this piano going off and this lady singing, and I'm like, now this is not a coincidence now. I don't see a sound system hook up or nothing, but hear this lady playing and singing. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's Mary's ghost.
One story particularly is a guest who was here for a Christmas party, and the evening had just about drawn to a close, and she had gone upstairs to her room. It was around 10 o'clock, and she had just gotten into bed when she heard a woman singing. Mama's gonna buy you a diamond ring if that diamond ring won't shine. And she says it was a beautiful, beautiful song, a very soothing, calm song. And she thought the party was going on and continuing without her.
The guest got out of bed and asked her friends where the singing had come from.
And they looked at her like she was crazy and said, there's nobody singing. She said, no, I heard a woman singing. She was singing a very beautiful song. And so they told her, no one's been singing. You must have just been imagining that.
But she wasn't the only one. The hotel reopened in 1999. And since then, many guests have called the front desk with complaints.
They'd call down to the desk and say, I think someone in the room next door left their TV or the radio on. I can't get any sleep. It's some lady singing. Person at the desk looked in the chart and said, I'm sorry, there's no one on either side of you. There's nobody there, but we'll take a look in case something strange happened. Nobody was in either room.
The ghost of Mary Marshall isn't the only lingering spirit said to still reside at the Marshall House.
In 1999, the hotel underwent a $12 million renovation, and this included a tremendous amount of tearing down walls and repairing and just basically gutting the building. And all kinds of interesting things were found at the Marshall House, one of which is what we refer to as the speakeasy.
The speakeasy was discovered in the basement of the hotel and is most likely a secret room from Prohibition days when partiers had to go underground, literally, for a good time. But evidence of a Prohibition-era speakeasy wasn't the only part of the hotel's past uncovered during the renovations. There was a far more gruesome discovery.
And they were in the dirt floor of the basement, digging for the infrastructure, bringing in the water, the electric, the gas, and they found human bones.
The bones weren't remnants of a secret killer's murderous past at the hotel. They were merely a reminder that medicine has only recently earned the adjective modern. Back when the hotel was a hospital, medical care was a lot less hospitable.
And when they amputated limbs, they got rid of them the best way they could in the dirt floor of the basement.
Unearthing the bones of the wounded soldiers may have accidentally disturbed their spirits' eternal slumber. Stories of Civil War soldiers' ghosts haunting the Marshall House are not uncommon.
When you get off the elevator, you can hear noises, see? And when the closer you get to the room, the voice just dies right down. When you come downstairs and ask the clerk whether anybody in the room, nobody in the room.
There is little debate that the Marshall House is a hotbed of supernatural activity. Nestled between the Great Smoky, Appalachian, and Blue Ridge Mountains lies the tiny village of Balsam, North Carolina. Today, those looking for a true getaway from it all can visit the Balsam Mountain Inn, tucked away and hidden from the hustle and bustle of city life, where time moves just a little bit slower.
The Blue Ridge is a special place, a way to get away where you can see beautiful sights. The Southern Appalachians are just an unbelievable place if you've never seen them. The high vistas and the expanse and the blues and grays of the mountains are wonderful.
Guests are drawn to the Balsa Mountain Inn because of her seclusion. She's hidden away.
While all this seclusion may lead to peace and quiet, there are distractions at the Balsa Mountain Inn.
Everybody has a good ghost story to tell around here.
My heart immediately froze. I was terrified.
It does kind of make the skin on the back of your neck stand up a little bit.
Today, the Balsa Mountain Inn is open year-round, and hiking, biking, whitewater rafting, and shopping are just some of the activities tourists enjoy. The wide hallways throughout the inn were once necessary to house the giant summer trunks of the wealthy who spent their summers here. Now the space is used as a gallery for local folk art and crafts. And today's guests can still enjoy fresh Balsa Mountain spring water straight from the source, the same water once thought to have healing powers. It all began in 1908 when the Balsa Mountain Inn was built.
Back in the days before air conditioning, there was no such thing as getting cool in the summer unless you went somewhere high. So there were 6 trains a day that came here and brought passengers from all over the southeast.
During these summers, the Balsa Mountain Inn hosted many events, including the annual Bach Social, a way for the community to come together. It was a place to eat, fundraise, and socialize. But one year, the innocence and security surrounding the Bach Social and this small inn in the mountains would soon come crashing down. A local sheriff, well-loved by his community, rode to the supper after his shift to profess his love to a young local woman. As he gathered up his last bit of courage, he dismounted his horse and walked towards the party. Suddenly, shots rang out. The sheriff had been shot.
Of course, it stopped Bach Social right there on the spot, and the sheriff did die.
Picnickers were horrified and watched in terror as a fellow sheriff ran to capture the killer.
They did catch somebody they said did the murdering in a laurel thicket down going toward Waynesville a little way.
Someone was caught, but no one knows the reason why he was murdered. Was it a crazed criminal or another of the woman's suitors? Whatever the reason, many say the spirit of the sheriff has stayed on at the Balsa Mountain Inn, and until the mystery surrounding his death is solved, he will forever remain there.
I was walking through, closing everything down, turning off all the lights. It was pitch dark in here. That's when the chair spun around to face me with a grinding sound. Someone was in the chair. I was scared. I was very scared.
If one ghost scares you, how about two? It appears the sheriff does not haunt alone.
We had a lady that was working here, and she said that she saw one lady walk through the wall.
It was around 2:00 in the morning. Two guests were asleep in their room on the second floor when they heard muffled footsteps and noises right outside the room. The doorknob at that point started to turn. They were terrified.
In front of their very eyes, the couple found an apparition of a woman in a blue gown.
They followed the gown into the hallway.
Where they saw the woman no longer appeared ghostly. Her fully visible form then disappeared around the corner. Like so many of the mysteries that remain unsolved in the Balsa Mountains, the origins of this woman are unknown. Some say she was the object of the sheriff's affection. Others say it could be the wife of another man who died in room 205 of the hotel.
The room that they're talking about, that the doorknob moves, we did have a man to die in there.
Years ago, a man took his family on a relaxing vacation at the Balsa Mountain Inn. He was checked into room 205.
He came down for breakfast that morning and had breakfast and went back up. And his wife, she went in and he was dead. He'd had a heart attack, I imagine.
Was his life cut short so suddenly that he doesn't know that he's dead? Or is he tied to the last place he lived on Earth, angry that modern-day guests in 205 disturb his eternal grief?
It was deep in the night. A man and his wife were staying. The man's wife heard someone weeping. On the edge of the bed, she saw a man sitting at the foot of the bed, wrapped in a quilt. And she thought it was her husband. She began to reach out to console him, to ask what was wrong. He turned to her, and she didn't recognize his face. She immediately turned to the bed and saw that her husband was lying beside her asleep, And as she turned back, the man dissolved before her very eyes.
Though he may usually be quiet, staff now know that agitating the ghost of room 205 isn't such a great idea.
I felt cocky that night, and I taunted the ghost within. I was more or less, come on, you know, give me something. I'm shaking your doorknob here. Nothing happened. So, scoffing at the ghost, I walked away. I got about 15 feet down the hallway when large raps, it sounded like fists, came upon the wall inside room 205 over and over. I took off running.
Why is the Balsam Mountain Inn so popular with visitors from the other side? Maybe it's the secluded locale, or perhaps it's the fresh mountain air. Evidently, a place to rest in peace is important to both the living and the dead.
You've been listening to a Travel Channel feature presentation.